Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Today I'm joined by Salvador Consalvi, who basically he approached me about this documentary he's making called Sydney Has No Horses. And I checked out the site for this film, and it just looks like a fascinating portrait of this man, a medicine man, in South Dakota on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And really just kind of this portrait about him and his lifestyle and just kind of the entire area that he lives in just looks like a really, just a kind of a perfect place to set a camera, you know, because something interesting will happen. So thank you, Salvador, for coming today.
Thank you. We love talking about this.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about the origins of this project. And you have a co-director, too, on this. Tell me about how that partnership came together.
Well, I came back from Antarctica, as we were talking before this, and was taking film classes to figure out how to get that documentary done. And Bridget Timmerman, who grew up in that area, father owns a ranch nearby, very supportive of Sydney since the 70s. She said, "Would you like to go to a Sundance?" And I had known a lot about this. Mm-hmm. About Sundances from years ago.
And we're not talking about the festival. We're talking about an actual
right.
Sundance.
I always forget to do that. Sundance is a four-day, very traditional four-day festival. It's not a festival. It's a ceremony, a religious ceremony. And most of the Plains Indians do them. The Lakota or the Sioux, it's a focal point of their tradition, their religious traditions. And like I say, it takes 4 days, and it is a ceremony of suffering. It is the ceremony where you see in movies called A Man Called Horse and so mm-hmm. forth, where mm-hmm. they pierce and hang people from the piercings, and the point is to suffer for your community and give flesh back to Mother Earth and so forth. But it's. And to the buffalo, actually. You know, in the past, it was to the buffalo. Now they're not buffalo hunters anymore. So it really has, that flesh offering part has moved beyond. So she invited me out there just to help on this one little interview. She had a vague idea. She wanted to do a short interview. And we went out there, and I had no idea whether it was who this guy was.
Yeah.
I didn't Google him or anything like that. I thought it could be a sideshow, you know, it could have been anything.
Yeah.
But we were there, and it was incredibly, he is incredibly traditional. You know, his house and everything is very typical modern. It's modern reservation style.
Sure.
You know, cars on the lawn, everything. You're just immediately kind of sucked into this, and you realize that you've kind of fallen into this other community. And when he gave the first interview, it was brilliant. It was an hour. He sat extemporaneously, gave us his entire history. It was an incredible moment. Something I think filmmakers, die for when it's
things you dream of, because you can almost, when you have an interview that good, you can almost kind of see the arc of the project right there. So it's one of those things where it's like you have that initial interview, and then you can kind of see how the film can kind of branch out.
Exactly, and we could see immediately that was the focal point for a far larger than just a 20-minute. Interview piece, you know, short piece that she was thinking about. So we decided, and we knew immediately that we were tiptoeing on this cultural tightrope because we didn't know very much. I had done a lot of studying, but it had been 15 years earlier, so everything was new to me. Like I could barely remember what was happening, you know, even though I read countless books. And books don't do it. That's another thing that was really fascinating, that you really start living this, these traditions. And Sydney started immediately on me correcting me because I have a yoga practice. And I said, you practice your religion. And he's like, "We do not practice our religion. We live our religion." Mm. And from that point on, I realized that he was really trying to do that. He's had a rough life. As far as a character study is concerned, that's a whole amazing story too. He went through all the modern trials and tribulations that a modern Lakota would go through, including alcoholism, including falling off the red road in some pretty dramatic ways. And he's tough. He's this big, tough-looking guy, and you know you wouldn't mess with him, you know. But he's this incredibly peaceful, religious person. So this conflict in him is just apparent. And he would sit down and talk to us for, you know, we'd pull the cameras in, and, you know, a number of the interviews we have are just horrible because there's people walking around. The sound's all impossible.
The ambience is hard to kind of work out and stuff like that.
Yeah, it looks great, but, you know, it's hilarious. Sometimes I would just try to get whatever we can. You know, we didn't want to break the feel of the conversation. And that's what happened. Essentially, in my head, I said, well, you know, we'll walk this tightrope, get as many interviews as we can until we, you know, step on something, make a mistake, irritate him, and he says, you know, get lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really, at one point, what I thought might happen.
Really?
That we could, you know, that the whole relationship could fall apart.
How so? Was it getting really deeper? There were certain things he was all of a sudden, because it seems like from what you're telling me, he was so receptive to the interviews and just so, like, he seemed like there was something in him that he wanted to share. There was something that it was time for him to share his story, I guess.
That is definitely the case. If we weren't so respectful, I think another filmmaker might have made a mistake, but we really did end up respecting him. There's a lot of contention on the reservation. There's a lot of interfamily struggle. There's other medicine men that he was training that have gone off and, you know, are saying nasty things about him, you know. So we didn't know if we wanted to interview somebody else, it would irritate him, and we wouldn't figure out why he was, you know, irritated about this if we mentioned something, you know.
Sure.
So all these little things that you couldn't possibly know were bubbling up and involved with us, related to us. The rest of the community were slow to accept us.
Sure,
too,
because
there's a big stigma about filming religious ceremonies, which we didn't actually, you know, take our cameras into anything really. We have him quite a bit. We got a lot of stuff around the edges that may irritate a lot of people. Not may, I think it will. But it's a matter of we were respecting his TOSHPA. It's his altar.
Sure. You know. And there's ways cinematically where even if you don't have that footage, like I know the film Man on Wire, where the most incredible thing is this man walking between the Twin Towers on a rope, and yet you never actually see it. It's just kind of the way they have the photographs and the way that people talk about it.
Yeah.
There's a way you can shoot around it and cinematically convey an event without actually having that.
And we're working on that in a very exciting way. Sidney is an artist. He paints, he sketches, and we've asked him to do sketches, and we're going to have some of those animated. So whatever he's comfortable with, he can sketch. We can discuss it, and we have an animator I'm working with now that I've just started to get to know, and our editor is incredible for doing exactly that. So we have an editor who's been giving us a lot of help that will be fully capable of doing that. And that's what's exciting on the project side. You know, so there's always the project side of getting this film done, and then there's the sort of the experiential side of being incredibly lucky to, you know, dive into this cultural experience for 2 years. It's amazing that we lasted 2 years, and now we're actually, you know, quite close. You know, our relationships have kind of matured in those 2 years too.
Yeah. Well, as far as Bridget, one thing I thought was really interesting when I was reading up on this project was that she grew up on a ranch near this reservation where you shot. So she was very familiar with the dynamics of the community and things like that. And also, it seemed like there was some sort of tension between the ranchers and the Native Americans, or there was a lack of understanding. You know, the ranchers couldn't really. Or tell me about that tension. Or was that part of the documentary too?
Well, we don't know actually. Mm. Yeah, we don't know if those nuances are going to make it in. If there's just such a big cultural story, religious story, you know, that's going to all be determined, you know, in the 3 months that we're trying to raise money for with our editor.
Yeah.
But it is a fascinating thing that she actually initially, though she grew up near there and spent summers there, her father actually had the relationship since the 70s.
Okay.
So they actually, the white ranchers, the ranching community, it's pretty tense normally. And Sidney grew up throughout the worst of it during the occupation of Pine Ridge and, you know, all of that, the real tense situations that occurred. And ranchers are quite, there's a lot of stories that come out that are just heartbreaking that that they'll do, but there's you know, there's a minority of the ranchers that are very supportive, right? So like Mr. Timmerman and a couple others that we have met who will allow them to take wood from their land that support, you know, with cattle and beef for their ceremonies.
Yeah.
Because these are poor people who have to every year feed like 100 people.
Yeah.
So
can't even imagine.
He's incredibly, supportive and thankful for it. So that tension does exist. And Bridget, originally, so it was only 3-4 years ago that she went to her first Sundance, because it's quite dangerous for people. And her father, actually, even though he had this great relationship and was very supportive, said, you know, don't go. Don't go to the reservation after dark. There were times when it was just too dangerous. It's just with drunk driving and so forth.
Oh, okay.
Not only drunk driving, violence. It is one of the poorest, one of the most violent per capita, most violent places in the country. It has one of the highest suicide rates due to the alcoholism. So I don't know how much of that we're going to be depicting, because, like I said, we went there to tell the story of a medicine man, and we got that. It is important in the character study that this is where this very spiritual guy was raised, and it's why all of a sudden, you know, he'll come out with things that you will shock you, you know.
Sure.
And so he's had a rough life. He's had his bouts of violence. He's, you know, he's been involved in some of the things that you wouldn't think a medicine man would have been involved in.
And that's fascinating, because then it just makes that character more complex and that human subject more complex. And
yeah.
Well, one thing I thought was cool was you have an interest in comparative religions. That's one subject that is an interest of yours. And you say that you always, it's in one of the press releases, it says that you're looking for answers to sort of fundamental questions concerning intercultural relationships and matters of consciousness. And I thought that I could sort of tie some of those statements to the trailer I saw for this film, where, Sidney Has No Horses. That's his name. That's the man's name. And he's talking about how he has a very unifying message, a very unifying spiritual message of, you know, there's only this one God, and we're all just kind of quarreling over who that God is, but there's really just this one God that we can all connect to. And I was wondering if some of those statements that he was having, was that something that just made you even more interested in, or some sort of spiritual quality that he was bringing forth in the interviews you wanted to capture?
Definitely. You know, at every turn, I can never predict when it's going to happen. Sometimes, but he always surprises me. So he's either going to surprise me on a consciousness, you know, level, or he's going to surprise me on the very real-world brutality of growing up on the Pine Ridge sort of level, and I never know when it's going to happen. But he was very moved during that interview, as you could see. He even tears up in the end of that, because he's at Bear Butte, this incredibly spiritual place that he took us to. You know, these last 2 years, he also taught me. I've started using my practices and merging those as well to try to really experience what he's talking about. And I've learned a lot about how the Lakota see the spirit world. And to me, they have a very rich, diverse view of consciousness, right? So there are a lot more conscious entities than just human beings, right? So And the term Metakwe Oyasin means we're all related. They mean everything, They mean earth, sky, wind, you know, every plant. All of these things are conscious, and they believe it. And that's the what I think is the most interesting thing about the experience of this, is that he's not joking. This isn't something, you know, that he's held on to. He's learned. He's read in a book.
Or he's putting up this front or something
right.
like that.
Well, he's very genuine, but he also sees that. And we've been there when he, you know, falls into trances. We've been to his, you know, Uwipis, which are very powerful night ceremonies. It's hard to describe. It's people will not believe the things that happen, or they'll think that they are all, you know, sideshows, you know, just jokes and things like that. But it doesn't feel that way. You know, he's, you know, as far as the story is concerned, that's what was always interesting, is if he was this big, you know, magician and just fooling us and fooling this, you know, person like myself, I'd be sitting there as a scientist pulling everything apart.
Yeah.
If he's fooling me, that's interesting. Yeah. You know, that that's really, that's a good enough story. But the emotions that come out while you're there are pretty amazing and hard to describe. So he is this genuine guy, and you can see him dipping into different states of consciousness, whereas we only do that when we're sleeping, meditating. He can do that, dip into these other states of consciousness, have these experiences, come back out, and tell us what happened sometimes.
Sure, sure.
That's what I found to be fascinating, in that the true definition of a shaman is exactly that, is someone who can go into the other realms of consciousness and come back and advise people based on what they've learned. And in those states, they encounter other forms of consciousness. You know, and we all of, like that you were talking about, comparative religions,
yeah.
they all have different ways of saying what those consciousness, those other consciousness, consciousness is, I don't know
yes.
what that
yeah, yeah.
are, but they're angels, they're leprechauns, they're, you know, but the difference between, comparatively, between our Western view of what's happening and their indigenous view is interesting as well. I started myself having these very troubling dreams when I, you know, would practice more, of being possessed by drunken Lakota and things like that, and feeling for 3 days, feeling pissed, you know, angry
sure.
for 3 days, and wondering if what the hell's going on, you know, and I would call Sydney and say, hey, you know, I think I know what you're going to say, but how do you interpret what happened? And of course, my interpretation would be like Jungian, that it was, you know, a representation of myself,
sure.
of that, you know, I shouldn't, you know, I went out and had a few too many drinks, and it was pulling my spiritual practice down, and that, you know, that came up out of my psyche, but not the Lakota. The Lakota say, no, you're opening yourself up spiritually with all these practices, and now you're vulnerable to these other entities. So it's the external versus internal thing that is going on. So that was that's a representation of our two interpretations being very different. So the images that come to you in dreams, you know, they may look like family members or to a certain extent, but they are other spirits to the Lakota.
Oh,
you know, that is, there's no difference between a vision and a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So when they talk about visions, they only talk about dreams now because of, you know, the influence of Western way of looking at it. So, but he, you could see him, he corrects me every time, you know, well, that is a vision. You know, that was, you know, because I've, when staying at his house, I had other very powerful dreams of warriors playing the flutes outside the window. And,
yeah.
you know, and I would interpret that very differently, you know. But he would say, no, those are the warriors. They always come around this house.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the great gifts of cinema, is being able to look at someone else's interpretation of sensations we all experience and feelings we all experience, and sort of seeing how they relate, and sort of like seeing the world through someone else's eyes. So that's why I'm excited to see this. I'm really looking forward to seeing. So just as a last thing, what do you see as the future for this project, or what are you working on at the moment? Because I think you have a Kickstarter that you're working on. Is this still production, or is this a kind of, are you in post as well?
No, we're trying to raise money for post.
Okay.
So
like right in the middle of those.
Yeah, we're right in the middle. We have enough footage for a great documentary. We may go back and fill in the gaps and interview, you know, maybe. But the plan is to go into post-production. When I get back, I actually had to take a job in Antarctica because, you know, the funds didn't last. So I got to go in the middle of the Kickstarter campaign, unfortunately. Oh, wow. But yeah, it might not be a problem. But so we're I'll get back in January, start in earnest the editing process. I've already gone through it once, the material, started showing the editor some of it. He's very excited about it, excited enough to do some of these things for us for free, which
is nice. Is quite that's always a yeah. plus. definitely.
So at this point it's just all fundraising for the most expensive part of the project.
Very exciting. Well, that's great. So, and at least for now, people can visit this site, SydneyHasNoHorsesTheMovie.com, and just find some really nice stuff, at least with background information. And also you have a trailer up as well that's available on Vimeo, and we'll have all those links on the
And we have too. Our Facebook page. We have
that's
a Facebook
right.
page. I think that one's under Documentary in Progress.
Okay.
So Facebook.Documentary in Progress. I don't know why we couldn't get Sydney Has No Horses.
Sure. It's not I was very, wondering, does it, it, do you know it, if he has his own Facebook page?
I think it was too long.
Sure, that's probably what it was. Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Salvador, for your time, and I can't wait to see this film. Yeah, so definitely check out SydneyHasNoHorsesTheMovie.com. And for all my recent reviews and interviews, check out HollywoodChicago.com and Indie-Outlook.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.